This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Tech Talk and my name is Jeff Sandu. In the new digital economy, traditional ways of running a business are swiftly becoming outdated. Disruption is happening across every sector that you can think of. If large businesses do not make efforts to innovate their own business, someone else will. And one way to start embracing digital adoption is through collaboration with digital companies, adopting the right culture in organizations to drive productivity. And here with me today are two guests who can share stories on digital adoption experiences, and they are...
Hi there, I'm Muhunden Kamarapule, Deputy Director of MDAC.
And I'm Jordan Schlepf, one of the partners of Rainmaking, and I head up our global corporate innovation business.
All right, Muhu, so we know a bit about MDAC and the drive for, you know, the Malaysian Digital Hub and, you know, making a hub of, you know, Southeast Asia for, you know, digital entrepreneurs and so forth. Let's shift the focus slightly towards Jordan. Rainmaking Innovation, tell me a bit about the company itself.
Sure. So Rainmaking has five pillars. The first one is where we began, which is our ventures business. So effectively, my business partners and I spent all our time building our own startups. We built 25 of our own ventures. A third of them we've exited, including an IPO. A third of them died, and a third of them still literally continue today. And that led into, after some successful exits, trying to give back to the entrepreneurial community. In 2010, we then founded a Startup Bootcamp, which is our global industry-focused startup accelerator network with now 20 programs around the world. And underneath that, we do some corporate, some co-working. So Rainmaking Loft, which is really the real estate that allows us to embed ourselves physically in the startup ecosystems in which we operate. Mm-hmm. And finally, and last but not least, is Rainmaking Innovation, which is our corporate innovation arm, which really helps with from everything from cultural mindset shift to building new startups and digital ventures.
And what's present here in Malaysia from Rainmaking Innovation? Is this the boot camps? Is it the startup, the co-working spaces?
So we've actually launched first with Rainmaking Innovation, and that's in partnership with MDEC. To be honest, if it wasn't for MDEC's partnership, we probably wouldn't be here in force. So it's through the VIP program that we've entered Malaysia. Traditionally, we actually enter a country with a startup boot camp program. Having said that, though, we're currently fundraising for an urban tech or a smart cities program here in Malaysia, which we hope to launch beginning of 2018. And then we're also in discussions with the Rainmaking Loft to get our physical presence here in Malaysia.
Mm. And you mentioned that it would not have happened if MDEC didn't come into play here. Why so?
Well, for us, we looked at Malaysia and we saw a really big opportunity in terms of the timing, both in the startup ecosystem, but also in the corporate arena, both with appetite and the kind of awareness to know that they need to change, things need to happen, but and the appetite to do that, but also the awareness to know that they don't have the capabilities. So saying, how do I actually do this, and where do I go to get some of that help? The reason being we wouldn't be here without MDEC is to navigate the corporate innovation space takes long lead times on a sales cycle basis. So to start off with launching a very complex and heavily human-driven corporate innovation business with long lead time, it's quite a big risk to take. Mm. So Startup Bootcamp typically is a way to de-risk that. So we give us a program, which is a three-year commitment, which then allows us to put a team on the ground. What MDEC brings to the party is that navigation, that network on the corporate side that allows us to say, do you know what? We can come here together to do something that we both believe in, partner passionately, and they provide that access to all the corporates that allows us to enter on a de-risk basis the corporate innovation work that we do.
Mm. And yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of work that MDEC does, I'm sure you're aware of it, it's very much in the digital space. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we do investment, we help Malaysian companies, tech companies to move up. This is a slightly different way of doing things where, if you know that, you know, our current contribution, GDP contribution of ICT is about 17.8%. The question is that what are we doing the rest of it, the non-digital companies who actually now have a platform through VIP to actually look at how they can look into digital adoption. Mm. This is where Rainmaking comes into the play. And it's a crucial partnership we have because we want to see how we can provide that opportunity to the non-digital companies to embark on this digital economy.
And Jordan, rainmaking innovation here in Malaysia, are you looking at, you know, trying to grow new startups or trying to help current startups into, you know, embarking this innovation? What's the focus here?
Absolutely. I mean, this is the thing with rainmaking. There's these sort of five pillars, right? And the reason why I think the partnership between MDEC and rainmaking is so unique is we both have skin in the game and we're both aligned on the ultimate objectives. Employment growth, GDP growth, and really pushing the innovation within the corporate sphere to add more value to the consumer. Mm-hmm. So when we invest, we're looking at, you know, building real estate here, going in partnership, one of the big construction companies. That's a big investment for us. And that ecosystem is about attracting the entrepreneurs from the early stage individual founders saying, how do I, you know, get a better career or how do I take a different path in life, to much more established companies who are looking to internationalize and grow. And we can provide them that global platform to then get the synergies and bring them either to Europe or throw them into our Indian office or the US. Mm. And really vice versa, bring our more mature companies in the US and Europe and look to really land them here in Malaysia as a gateway to ASEAN. Mm. And so for us, absolutely, there's one side. So we really play at the nexus. The nexus of the startup world and the corporate world. And where those two meet is where we believe the biggest value to be, and that's where we play every single day.
And it's not without a huge challenge to find that balance. So, you know, what's the biggest worry at the moment or the biggest roadblock at the moment?
The roadblock, to be honest, is, you know, it's an education. Courage, quite frankly, and that's predominantly on the corporate side, not on the startup side, and not actually on the government side. Mm. We've worked in other ecosystems where the government's been the skeptical one and not very helpful. And what's really different here in Malaysia is, you know, MDEC are really being forward-thinking and they're pushing it and they're taking risks, which is awesome. So that's where we're aligned in our culture and our values. But on the corporate side, there's that lack of senior stakeholder buy-in. And there's that ultimately that old school mindset of going, well, how am I going to make an ROI this year instead of looking a little bit further out? Or there's all this startups, all this noise. Does it really affect me? Like my business is still profitable. It's still doing well. And this old way of thinking of like, you know, I'm too big to fail. Like I'm a 14 billion ringgit business. You know, I'm not going to, I've been trading for 80 years or 100, 200 years. I'm not going to go out of business anytime soon. Mm. And that sort of lack of real understanding of what's coming and the pace of change and underestimating that, but also the willingness to try some small things to get the ball rolling now. So how do you sit there and say, what can we do to push digital adoption and innovation and work with startups? And the willingness to do that from the senior stakeholders so that even the more passionate high potentials can take on stuff, be unleashed to do the stuff that they want to do and the opportunities they see in the market, go launch them. But right now they're being held back because they keep asking themselves that question. Mm. Well, what happens if I fail? Mm. Will I get fired? What happens to my prospects, my job, my remuneration in my, you know, in the company? And right now the biggest barrier is that education on a senior level, more often than not, to be able to give them the courage, but the really understanding of how to do this in a way where it isn't about taking big bets on risky stuff. Because that's the biggest fallacy of this. The biggest fallacy of entrepreneurship is thinking, well, to be an entrepreneur, you've got to take large risks, right? Absolutely not. That's crazy. You know, a serially successful entrepreneur, not a serial entrepreneur, you could serially fail, right? But a serially successful entrepreneur understands that it is madness to bet your house on like a big leap of faith. And so instead, you're asking yourselves, how do I learn whether something's going to work or not? So that if it doesn't work, I'm not bankrupt, I'm not out the game. Mm-hmm. So how do you have multiple bites of the apple? And that's really when you start talking about how do you apply lean startup? How do you apply piloting with you know, outsourced R&D? So the VIP program, really simple. It's about globally sourcing Series A, so later stage, more mature startups that are strategically aligned to the big A corporate in question, to do commercially focused pilots. By definition, this is outsourced R&D, which is a hell of a lot faster and a hell of a lot cheaper than your traditional R&D or M&A. And quite frankly, it's a scenario saying, well, look, you've got all these VCs, venture capital, pumping billions of money, and all these young, passionate, talented people, and some of them actually in regulated industries aren't that young. They're coming out of industry to start startups in their mid-30s and in their 40s because they see the pain, they see the problem, they want to fix it. These people who are funded by these billions and billions of dollars of venture capital, it's like, why wouldn't you, you know, collaborate?
Do we see that same type of hunger here? Because it always comes down to, you know, the hunger to change or the hunger to, you know, not settle for what we have. And, you know, we face these roadblocks and we're like, let's build something. And we see it in places that are booming. You know, you've got your Silicon Valley, you've got, you know, places like New York, you can see here in bits and places as well, in Malaysia as well. How do you get this mindset to grow across the industry, not just, you know, all these, you know, technopreneurs in that sense?
Yeah, I think that's a very valid question. We see a certain type of maturity within industries. You know, I think if we look at it from the perspective of the media industry, for example, the disruption level is much higher. So the readiness of the industry to embrace digital adoption is much, much higher. Then after that, we saw retail, e-commerce coming on board. Now we are seeing banking, for example, insurance, right? Telcos, whom are heavily being disrupted at the moment. And you see the readiness from the companies are much more. But we're seeing this uptrend. It's not just within that. We had sessions with, we have the session, you know, where we speak, we have roundtable sessions with different industries. We spoke to construction, healthcare, and we have also done insurance. And it's interesting that we see that there's a consensus that these companies, the traditional companies, are looking at digital disruption. They are aware of it. They perhaps don't have a structured approach on how to tackle this, but the awareness is, you know, picking up at the moment.
The beautiful thing, this is again where the partnership really, really works, is in Malaysia, because basically the mindset is no one wants to be the first guinea pig. No one wants to be the first mover because no one wants to take the risk. What if it doesn't work, right? That fear of failure again. The scenario here, though, is everyone likes to follow. And if it's a big brand that has done something and it is done well and it's a success, they will do it. So the really interesting thing that Rainmaking provide is the real case studies of what's happened in their industry in more mature markets. So what's happened in New York? What's happened in London? What's happened in Berlin? And we can bring those real case studies with real quotes with real big companies and brands that they know about. And we can show them what worked and what didn't and what we're doing out there. And that, to be honest, has been one of the biggest or most effective ways we've seen our engagement work here in Malaysia with these roundtables. When you start bringing those real case studies to life, you can see the sort of fear decrease. Because the beautiful advantage is you don't need to necessarily make the same mistakes as the mature ecosystems the US and Europe have done.
I'm speaking to Jordan Schilf of Rainmaking Innovation and also Mohundan Karamapulai from Digital Adoption Ecosystem in MDEC, and we'll be right back. BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back. My name is Jeff Sandhu and I'm here with Jordan Schilf of Rainmaking Innovation and also Mohundan Karamapulai of MDEC. And, you know, early on we were talking about the partnership that you guys have formed. Let's talk about some examples, if you have, I mean, the both of you could probably share here, of, you know, global case studies of corporates and startups working together, collaborating and creating something new.
Very much exactly with the VIP program, same scenario, connecting growth stage startups with corporates to do commercially focused pilots. Let me give you a real case study. So big multinational bank in Europe. The compliance in the financial industry is ever increasing. The cost for risk and compliance is a major issue. And effectively, one of our banking partners came to us and said, look, we've got real problems with fraud. We've got real problems with compliance. How can you help us? And we saw a Series A startup that was targeting effectively applying open graph theory to the Bitcoin blockchain, which was essentially looking for a suspicious transaction on the Bitcoin blockchain. Their customers are predominantly governments looking for weird stuff happening on the Bitcoin blockchain. Now, the banks don't care about the Bitcoin blockchain. However, the question we proposed is when we came to a pilot, said, hey, could we take their technology, work with you, and deploy it to the fiat transaction network, the banking transaction network, and can it be your current anti-money laundering systems? And so that was an example of a pilot. So sort of tech focus, bit of co-creation. We ran it for 3 months, and the results that came out of it are magnitudes better on their current AML systems. That translates into real dollars really quickly. Mm. That's just an example.
And we've seen, it's not like, you know, these large corporates here in Malaysia are not doing anything to, you know, disrupt their own selves. We see them organizing their own weekend hackathons and boot camps and inviting startups to, and even people with ideas to pitch in and do this. So how's it different in a way that, you know, rainmaking comes into play, and, you know, what do you help or assist to ensure that, you know, the boot camps or the hackathons that they run are, you know, comes out with a proper ROI at least?
Yeah, well, you've got to understand what's what, right? Because the truth is, there's a lot of innovation theater is the word we use. There's a lot of... So corporate innovation still mainly consists of buzzwords. It's still mainly misunderstood, and there's a lot of noise, and it's hugely fragmented. And quite frankly, there's a lot of me too. So people are running a hackathon. I'm like, okay, why are you doing it? They're like, because he's doing it. And so there's this sort of lemming effect of everyone following each other, doing a bunch of stuff. And it's like, tick box, we've got an innovation lab. And I'm like, great, what does it do? Like, we have one.
Haven't figured out what to do
or why it's relevant. But realistically, you know, hackathons and stuff, when done right, have their place, absolutely. So, for example, an internal hackathon done with internal staff is a great way to do cultural mindset shift, to create awareness, to create inspiration, and to really build that sort of internal stakeholder buy-in and the internal momentum. But it's not designed, nor has it ever really meant to be designed, as the ideation mechanism where the ideas that are going to come out are going to be transformative and make you a ton of money. So, as long as you're understanding the place of these things and what they're really designed to do, i.e. what the actual KPIs should be, which is very rarely, with a lot of stuff, ROI-driven, then it's part of the mix of things that you do to build up your organizational capability, to build up the awareness, because cultural mindset's a major issue.
Yeah, and also that if you also need to ask yourself, and what are you trying to solve? I think that's a very important question. Yeah. Are you trying to solve something which is 5 years down the road? Are you trying to solve a real pain point today? That will determine the kind of strategies you use. For example, there was one hackathon done by an airline recently, and the strategy behind was actually for talent acquisition. It was a real pain point for them, right? They've lost quite a number of digital talent, and they wanted to acquire them. Mm-hmm. And the best way is actually to put them in a test, two-day test, get their people to work together and say, hey, yeah, you are good, you know, and then they offer them the opportunity. So, yeah, I do agree. It goes back to the strategy. Yeah. And I think there are about a few challenges that we have noticed. You know, we launched VIP early this year.
Okay.
And we've worked with a couple of, you know, a few of these large corporations already working together with RMI.
I think there's a piece here where, why is it different? We've been doing, so we got into corporate innovation before it was really called corporate innovation.
Like, before it was cool.
Before it was cool. Like, genuinely, we were the first accelerator programs. We launched Startup Bootcamp in 2010. And we were the first accelerator, but we were the first accelerator program who took an industry focus. So it wasn't a themed vertical. It was like, hold on, financial services, insurtech, mobility, digital health, logistics. So we took that industry focus, and we believe that you should have multiple corporates on one side and startups on the other. And bring in the regulator if it's a regulated industry, and bring them to the table. And when you have all of those sort of three parts of the triangle together in the accelerator program, that's where you get the maximum results. So by doing that before anyone else, what was really intriguing, and sort of a couple of years later in the early 2000s, you know, people were saying, oh, this accelerator program is fantastic, Jordan, but can you help us with the other problems that we have? And what's really intriguing is, so we've been at it a long time, and we've been doing it in multiple different industries with a lot of different players. And that experience now, you know, we've learned a lot, and we've made a lot of mistakes, both, you know, together with our corporate partners. And that's the real big difference, because in Malaysia, there's a lot of people who say to us, Jordan, can rainmaking help us with X, Y, Z? And I said, no. And they go, why? And I go, we'll pay you. And I said, don't care, because I don't believe it's going to work. It's not going to deliver the impact, because this is the learnings that we have, so we're not going to do that for you. And you watch their, like, jaw drop, right? Because they're like, but I'm trying to give you money. And you're like, yeah, not interested, because that's the difference.
Absolutely. Yeah, I just wanted to share that, you know, we realized about three different categories of challenges faced by Malaysian corporates, and maybe this is something generic as well. The first one is actually in terms of the buy-in. I think that's crucial, actually, the buy-in from the senior management, and also the ability to understand that a digital adoption is not about just IT. It's not about your backend. It's not about your computers and the servers that you already have.
This is what happens in the boardroom meeting. That's what they think about when you talk about digital adoption, right? We've got 10 computers. Why do you need more?
We're fine with that. Digital adoption goes beyond that, as you know. It's about new business models. It's about your survivability, future-proofing yourself. That's crucial. The second part is actually on the capabilities. So the companies will always go back and say, okay, do I have the right people? Do I have the right talent to take this up? What do I need to do? Sometimes they don't really get a sense of understanding a direction of where they can go when they want to do this. The third part is always that's in their mind is the cost, the ROI. Digital adoption, I think it's innovation in a way as well, right? You don't put something today and hope that you can get something out 1 or 2 days down the road. How do you put that into your digital strategy, right? Or should you create one, for example? And these three things are very crucial. And what we're trying to do in VIP is that to sort of give them the kickstart, right? To allow them to figure that out in the 6 months program that we put in together, to be able to get them to that stage where they can at least have some kind of idea, and on top of that, they have a strategy to move forward.
Mm. And VIP has been running since the start of the year here in Malaysia, is that correct?
Yes, so it's part of MDEC's digital adoption approach, right? The idea is that how can we help Malaysian corporates to future-proof themselves? One of the key programs is actually called VIP, and it's a platform that we have direct relationship with Rainmaking.
And the main reason why we chose to start with the VIP program is because it's a program that actually tackles by definition, it has to tackle a lot of the major challenges in this at once. Mm. So one of it is, yes, you have to have that strategy of what you're going to focus on, where do you choose to collaborate, where do you choose to compete. In doing that, you have to understand what your current capabilities are. It's like saying, okay, well, do you genuinely have the capability to build digital product startup style? You know, everyone can talk about business model innovation. Do you genuinely have the capability to do that? And then furthermore, it's about looking at the wider corporate innovation challenges, not just from the talent and the skill set, the culture and the mindset, the way of thinking, but the environment in which they operate. So the governments, how do they make investments? How do things get green-lighted or progress? So what's the internal process, the governance, the processes, the structure? How are they going to manage the KPIs? Because the standard ROI or sort of NAV or whatever the typical go-to KPIs would be metrics, or like project management type metrics. Is it on time, on budget, to the specifications up front? Those don't really apply to these things. So from the accountancy to the KPIs to the buy-in, it has to tackle all of these aspects. So building that organizational capability with senior buy-in and finding something that is very commercially focused, that is going to deliver real money, because quite frankly, with the VIP, we understand that if we start here, you get a very successful outcome with a high chance of a high probability of success from the get-go, which then further builds up the momentum. It's like you can watch the dam breaking and the senior guys going, oh, this innovation thing actually made me money. That's wow, okay. And then their willingness to invest or their willingness to do more and take a much more portfolio approach to innovation, both internal, external, more pilots, really start creating that portfolio is really the key next step. Why? Because by definition, what we're doing in innovation is trying to navigate uncertainty.
All right.
If it was certain, we'd all just project manage it and de-risk it. There would be no, just place your bets, bang. But it is uncertain by definition, which means that you have to take small little bets and you have to have this way to continually adapt and evolve. And that mechanism to manage your portfolio, both internal and external, is really one of the skill sets that is lacking. Mm. But you've got to build that up, because innovation is management. But managing your innovation portfolio from, your core to your adjacent to your transformational, what's the blend? 70% on your core, 20% on your adjacent, 10% on transformational. How do you do that with new products and new markets? How do you do that internally and externally in parallel? Well, that's where we come in. But the key for us, based on our experience in Europe and the US, has been that the VIP program is a great way to sort of launch and start, tackle some of the hardest problems up front, but then get good results that then allow us to get us to permission early doors from the powers that be internally to then go off and do more.
And what's happening from now till end of the year from the both of MDEC and also Rainmaking Innovation?
So we've got a couple of things lined up. I think there will be a sort of a platform session, right? We're planning to do somewhere in August. The idea is that for those companies who are seriously looking at digital adoption and innovation, this would be a great opportunity for them to come and listen to some of the guys who have done it, right, and listen to the challenges. And also those organizations who are going through VIP program today would also be there to share some of the findings, the learnings, and the enlightenment that they've gone through, right? So that, I think, would be great.
It's a great showcase. Are we allowed to mention who's involved with the VIP program?
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, right now we've got our three sort of core foundational partners, Digi, Gamuda, and Malaysian Airlines. We've got a fourth spot available, so we're in talks with a couple of the courageous ones here in Malaysia to join the fourth founding. There's a sort of four slots for the founding partners of the VIP program. But yeah, it's a great showcase event in August. Us for Rainmaking, we're currently fundraising for an urban tech startup bootcamp program here in Malaysia, as well as in discussions with putting a very large Rainmaking loft here in Kuala Lumpur, which is scary, but exciting at the same time.
And it's being courageous. Is, you know, whenever you talk about digital, whether it's adoption, whether it's a journey that you start on, it's just that word that keeps coming up. It's, you need to be courageous. Is it a world of fear? In, you know, when we talk about, you know, digital, people talk, they shy away. You know, IT budgets are being cut down, and it feels like. You just need to face the fear, and it's actually not that scary.
It's not that scary as long as you do it the right way. The problem is that part of the reason why the fear exists is they are looking at trying to do new things which are uncertain with the old ways of working. So if you think about it in a corporate, it's like, oh, they want to launch a new digital product. How do they do that? Well, someone writes a business plan. It's 20, 30 pages. It's going to cost 10 million, you know, and that's US. And then they have to roll it out nationally because if it's not big, it's not sexy. So it's got to be scale, right? Mm-hmm. And so suddenly... you have the way the internal processes work is to meet the financial hurdle rates and so on is by definition, when they try something, they're trying it with like national rollout. And by the time they've done it internally and built something, they're committing tens of millions of dollars. And if that's wrong, yeah, that is scary. But what they don't really know is you don't do it that way because that's the crazy way of trying to put all your eggs in one basket and try and pick the winner. It's a way like, you know, early stage corporates, they try and invest in startups. And it's quite amusing when they just go, well, we invested in this one startup. And I was like, yeah. Well, we really hope it's a unicorn. We really hope it's a winner. And I'm like, even VCs who do this professionally know they're rubbish at choosing the winners. That's why they invested like 15 and they have the portfolio. But furthermore, it's really educating them to these structured ways and structured programs to do it where it is de-risked. Mm. So once you tell them and you show them that there are ways to explore and navigate this uncertainty, that really do deliver material value to your business, both today and in the future, but it's not going to be about putting a $10 million bet on the table, then that's awesome. Mm. They get it. But it's this kind of like, you don't know what you don't know.
Mm. And MDEC is not putting all its eggs into one basket because obviously you're doing so many things at the moment. And you know, what's the goal? What's the ambition here for you guys?
You know, the ultimate goal is to basically increase the digital economy pie. Right, that's the biggest thing because there's so much of opportunity behind it, and that's what we want to do. We focused on last couple of years. You've heard a lot about going direct to the people, the eRiziki project, eUsahawan project, really bringing up giving the digital opportunities for Malaysians, and now there's another area we want to look at, which is actually the businesses, as I mentioned just now, the non-digital, and the VIP platform basically gives us so much of learning. Which is actually really crucial for MDEC because at the end of the day, what we want to do is create that right ecosystem. And that's what we want. With the right ecosystem, in future, companies who want to adopt digital would be able to know where to go, who to talk to, what are the kind of policies behind that's supporting them. You know, for example, tax exemption and human resource and whatever not. And that's a crucial part of it. And that's why we are doing this.
And just one last question before we leave. Basic thing that a company or a corporate can sort of just look at in order to future-proof themselves in a digital world. Where do they start? And Jordan is scratching his head in thinking of, gosh.
So, I would suggest a short answer to that is go to mdec.my/VIP.
Because that will be the great place to start any digital, you know, journey in a sense. Jordan, have you gathered your thoughts yet or shall we call it?
it really depends on the organization. I mean, I know if I was a CEO of a large PLC or GLC, you know, I know where I would start. But The problem is that's the ideal world, and we don't live in that ideal world. We live the current reality is different. So the truth of the matter is you've got to meet each corporate where they are today, and you've got to meet them in their current reality, and then you have to find the best path for them from where they are, and that's bespoke. So there are things and capabilities they definitely need to build.
Muhu, and what's the website again?
It's mdec.my/VIP.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
And I've been speaking to Jordan Schilf of Rainmaking Innovation and also Muhundan Karamapulai, the senior manager at the Digital Adoption Ecosystem in MDEC. And you've been listening to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.